Welcome, everyone, to the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. I'm Paul Niefer, your host, and today I welcome Steve Henry from Nevada, Iowa, not Nevada, you know, out in my neck of the woods, it's Nevada, but in your, I know in your area, it's Nevada. So how are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great, and thank you so much for just inviting me to join you here today. I appreciate everything you do and just the support and really encourage you to keep on doing it.
Well, and I'm going to confess for the audience out there that this is, Steve, my fourth attempt to get this done right. We've had some technical difficulties with the first three, so hopefully this one goes through just fine. So, Steve, why don't we go ahead and start off with, I know your family's been farming in that area for certainly probably close to what, half a century or more. So let's go ahead and start with how you came to that part of the world.
Sure. Well, thanks again, Paul. Our farm's name is Longview Farms, and we're just a corn, soybean, and seed corn operation. My grandfather started this operation in 1955. He was farming 750 acres in Monona County, Iowa, and he sold half of it when my mom started going to Iowa State. And we're only 8 miles from Iowa State, and he fell in love with this county because it reminded him of his home county when he was a boy in Illinois. And so he came here and sold, like I said, he sold half of his farm and bought the home place in a place south of Nevada, and off he went. And my dad started farming with him after a short stint in the military, and they farmed together for 6 years before my grandpa passed away, plowing in a field a half mile from where I'm sitting today. And so my dad ran the operation by himself with some employees. He always had one person helping him throughout his career. And then I came back in 1988. And started farming after a career in ag lending before I came back. And then Dad and I farmed together for 6 years, and he retired. And he was unusual in the fact that he just walked away and said, "Have fun. Call me if you need help, but don't call." So
I was going to say, you know, it's not too often where you see farmers that are willing to just walk away. I mean, I've run across farmers that are in their 90s and they're still out there farming, and you know, they just never want to retire. So that is pretty unique.
Yeah, my parents have been very, very supportive of our operation as we've grown and expanded, and you know, they kind of became investors in our operation, mm-hmm. so to speak, where if they found a farm that they liked, and you know, we'd kind of decide which one of us was going to buy it, and you know, they stood there with me side by side along the way. So I've been very blessed to have very supportive parents along the way.
And I think you had mentioned earlier on that the name is Longview, but I think there is some family connection to that name, isn't there?
Yes, it is. It's because it was actually my mom's dad, Kenneth Long, that started this farm. So we tied Longview together to come up with a name that everyone could identify with. And our tagline is to honor the past, steward the present, look to the future.
Yep. No, that's a good logo, good motto. Now, you sort of touched on the fact that you came back to the farm in 1988 after being a little bit of a banking career. Now, was that in ag banking? I'm guessing if it was, you probably went through some unique circumstances back then.
Yes, it was, you know, from 1983 to 88, once I graduated from college, the jobs were hard to come by, and I moved to Norfolk, Nebraska, where I was with the Federal Land Bank, there for about 2.5 years, where basically that's where I started, and I ended up recommending several loans for foreclosure. I was too young to actually do the foreclosures, which I'm thankful for. But it was just a interesting time. And then when the wheels fell off the bus of the land bank, I went to work with MetLife in Kearney, Nebraska, in their ag investments decision. So it was a great opportunity for Laurie and I to just learn and grow in our careers and in our marriage. And we're very thankful that we had the time away from the farm before we came to the farm to actually kind of make it our chosen career.
Now, I think, and again, I probably know more than I might otherwise know, but I think your original goal was that you were going to come back to the farm after college, but something happened to change that. fill the readers in or the listeners in on that.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Yeah, I had been an intern with the land bank between my junior and senior year, but I was in my mind headed back to the farm. And I was a farm operation major, and the senior banquet, we invited our parents and my fiance Lori at the time, and Dr. Ron Hansen from the University of Nebraska stood up and said, "Mom, dads, if you let your kids come home straight from the farm, you're taking away an opportunity for them to learn and grow and understand." And yeah. So we all heard that message, and we kind of said, you know, there's something to this. And we're young. We didn't have anything to lose. And 1983 wasn't a bright spot in farming. And
no.
It's funny just how God had worked it out so we could have a great career. And, you know, I think I bring back those lessons of leadership and working for others. I think I recall on those experiences every day around here.
Yeah, no, certainly you and I are about the same age. And, you know, that was about the time when I was graduating from college and I was determining, you know, do I come back to the farm? Now, part of it, my wife at that time, yes, I was married between my junior and senior years. She goes, "I want nothing to do with farming," not realizing, you know, 35 some years later, we'd be buying a farm and living on a farm. But at that point in time, and then my dad only had a 8th grade education growing up in the Dakotas, and he thought it was really important for me to be a CPA. Now, if I wanted to come back to the farm, that'd be fine, but be a CPA. And in hindsight, I think it was probably the best decision for Patty and myself. So you essentially found out probably during that process what type of farms worked well, what types of operations maybe didn't work as well. So you brought a lot of that knowledge or school of hard knocks, so to speak, back to the farm operation. So as you started to grow, I think my memory is most of your farm right now is fairly close to where your operation base is at. Is that right?
Yes. Our family-owned ground is probably within a 6-mile radius of our operation, but our operation is in Story County, Iowa, and we touch all 4 counties that surround us, but just right on the county line of each of them. We really don't go out of Story County very much.
And that's sort of similar in where I'm at. I'm actually in Walla Walla, Washington today, and that's sort of where I grew up. And the state line's only, as you look out of my office right here, the state line's only about 3 miles away. So it's very easy to be in both Washington and Oregon as far as farming. And sometimes you actually have a field that straddles both states. You know, it isn't a simple division. So I'm guessing even with county lines, sometimes you might have something similar to that.
But
so
no, go ahead.
I was going to ask you, or actually you to finish your train of thought and then I'll jump in.
Well, one of the things I neglected to mention though is that you know, even though I've been farming since 1988, Lori and I've been very blessed to have our two of our three sons come back to farm with us here within the last, Scott's been back now 7 years and Eric's been back for three, starting his fourth year right now. And that's been a real opportunity and a blessing for the farm to see that it's going to carry on to the next generation.
And I think they were similar to you, your situation, in that they started mm-hmm. outside of the farm and then came back to the farm. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Scott had a career with one of the largest farms here in Iowa, kind of doing some business development and just working with different investments that farm was doing. And then Eric had an opportunity to go to Alaska, and he spent a year up there working at a ski resort in a finance department. Basically, I'd like to say so he could ski and fly fish. But
I was going to say, you know, I've been to Alaska a few times to go fishing, but not skiing. And I didn't learn to ski till I was like 30 years old. So I have no form. You know, it's just I just want to go down the hill as fast as I can. But there's no problem with being a little bit of a ski bum for a little bit. My youngest son is right now, I think, in Turkey. He's going to head his way to Morocco, and actually I'm going to go visit him in December. So he's definitely my world traveler. But I guess one question I would have for you is over the 30 plus years of developing the farm, growing the farm, I guess I'd be curious what you think you did right and then maybe what you did wrong possibly.
Sure. I would say probably the thing that has helped me the most is I've had a great team of people working with me as I've grown the operation and learned and made mistakes along the way. They've been very patient with me. One of the guys, Cal, has been with our family actually 3 years with my dad before I came back to farm, and he's been very patient, and he's just been an anchor to really help the operations grow. I would say, you know, getting Lori involved after she had a career with the Chamber of Commerce in Ames for quite a while until our youngest Eric was born, and then it was a balance of daycare and time. And she just said, you know, she could be a mom and get involved in the farm, which allowed us to get a really in-depth focus on understanding our costs. And I would say understanding the financials in a way that allowed me to build an accrual managerial accounting system with the profit centers that we had has been a real strength of understanding that has allowed us to know where we're at. So the decisions we're making, we can have some confidence that we know what we're doing, and we also have an exit plan if something should go bump.
Yeah, I think so many farmers that I talk with, they view accounting or those records related accounting, they sort of view it as, I won't say drudgery, but they just view it as not being worth that much. And I think what we find out for the successful farmer such as yourself, that having a good set of accounting records, understanding your cost structure, it's a management tool, and it can be a very effective management tool that makes you or allows you to make much better informed decisions than not having it. So it's good to hear that I think your operation believes that same type of policy works very well for your operation.
Well, it's given us some confidence to be able to budget and to look ahead. And so much of accounting is a rear view look. But if we can help drive our businesses by looking out the windshield, I think it has allowed Lori and I and our family and team as a whole to do things with confidence, and it's been a real advantage, I feel, to us.
Yep.
You know, you asked about things that I might have changed or anything. You know, I would probably say I'd focus a little more on relationships surrounding me. And I think that we've done a good job of being a part of our community and things like that. But we get so busy doing things at times that maybe I haven't always just taken that pause and just been present. So
I think I resemble that remark at times. You know, I'm definitely a very much a worker bee, and I tend to go, you know, ding, 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 ding. And then my wife says, Hey, Paul, you need to take a time out. Okay. I understand. I need to take that time out. So now one of the things, cause I have been to your farm operation, that I really noticed is that your shop is extremely clean and it's immaculate. And it seems like you have viewed that as also part of that culture that you're trying to develop with your team. So just go over that a little bit.
Sure. Well, back in 2011, when I built the headquarters, Scott had been working for this farm, and the people who worked for him identified in the farm's name, and they weren't just saying they worked for Steve and Lori Henry. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And so we built this operation to kind of we needed the room and the space, but we also wanted to do it with a spirit of excellence. We wanted to kind of just do it in a way that represents who we are, where we want to go. And I guess that's kind of the vision that we had when we built the headquarters. And we've been building on that too, as the boys have come back. It probably gave them an idea that, okay, mom and dad are committed to the future of the farm. They're committed to try to do it with excellence. And we want to be a part of the neighborhood and serve the community in a way that they had seen in other places.
So I think you mentioned Lori's role in the farm is sort of on the financial side. Your role, I'm going to say, is sort of, I don't know if I want to call it CEO, but being involved with maybe some of the vision. What would be Scott's role, and then what would be Eric's role in the farm operation?
Sure. Well, we do have defined roles, and we do have defined areas of responsibility. And you're right. I would be kind of the CEO, we like to call it a visionary, kind of the one that has a bigger picture to see what's out there. Scott would be kind of in a business development where he would try to figure out, you know, bringing home two family members. We had to figure out how to increase the economic capacity of our engine. And yep. So Scott and Eric have done some investments outside of just Longview Farms, which have allowed them to have income that's not all dependent upon Longview. Yep. And that's been a real real joy for Lori and I to see them take a risk, put their name on the line, and to step up and try to come up with new things to do.
Yeah. It's you know, my one of my sons is involved in real estate, and he's got me in more deals, and I sort of enjoy it, but then I'm the one that has to actually put all the tax returns together. So that part I'm not enjoying as much, but it is sort of interesting to see him actually, you know, spot an opportunity, decide whether it makes sense, and then actually bring it to fruition and get it done. So it is, you always want your kids to do better than you did. So, that's always been my goal, to see my kids, well, not necessarily do better. I want them to do better, but I also want them to enjoy what they're doing and have a passion about it.
Absolutely. You know, that was one of the things that Lori and I have always raised our sons to say, we don't want farming to be a default choice. There's lots of ways to have a great life, lots of careers that are very rewarding. We have chosen this, and our family has chosen this, and we have a tradition that we really enjoy, but we don't want to feel default or an obligation to do it. So, and that's where we've been pleased that Kyle, our middle son, has participated with Scott and Eric on several of the investments they've made, but even though he's not an active part of the operation, which could lead me back, we kind of got a little detoured, is then Lori is the what you would call the CFO of our operation. She's the one that maintains the books, the payroll. She does the government accounting. She does the merchandising of the grain. Scott and I and Lori all sit down to kind of give the general path and the direction and what we want to do. But we then charge her to kind of figure out the best way to do the merchandising of the grain sale if we think we want to do that.
I think Steve, what you're really saying is Lori's the boss.
Well, it's like, I think I've shared this with you before, Paul. The boys always say Steve or Dad. They always say Dad. Dad, we understand how we're going to be able to replace you. Oh, we still haven't got Lori's role figured out on how to get her replaced.
No, she's done a good job of that.
And we've actually had meetings to try to figure that out because as farms grow, just the understanding and the knowledge that occurs is so organic that it's not really formal. And to try to bring someone in on the finances or the accounting or the spreadsheets that are created, it's not... it's going to be different, and that's something Scott and Eric are going to have to figure out.
And the key is you're going to let them figure it out. I mean, that's their role. They need to figure that out. So, Well, Steve, I think we're going to go ahead and take a pause now for a sponsor message, but we'll come back and continue the conversation after this sponsor message.
Get timely updates about taxation, accounting, succession planning, and other issues that are unique to farmers and agribusiness processors. Find out about major agribusiness events and how to comply with new laws that affect your business. Subscribe to Farm CPA at blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness and experience the CLA promise. blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. I'm Paul Niefer, your host, and we're going to continue our conversation with Steve Henry from Nevada, Iowa. So Steve, one of the things I know you'd sort of mentioned that one of the things you wish you'd spent more time with is maybe, I'm going to say community involvement or seeing, you know, stepping back and having that relationship. But you have had community involvement and also you have some involvement with the Farm Credit Bank system and so on. Can you go through that?
Sure. Well, one of the things that I was raised as was to be involved in the community. I was a 4-H kid, you know, pleasure, head, heart, hands, and health. And that mission of service has always kind of been in who I've been. So not only trying to be a faithful supporter of our church and participant in that, you know, we've tried to serve in our communities through some of the Food at First programs. I've served on our local co-op board and been a part of the Soybean Association here in Iowa. You know, Lori and I have both served Iowa State on their community committee for ag development. She had a term and then I had a term. And Lori's been a part of our local planning and zoning, a Vision Nevada, and she served as a co-chair to help build the community auditorium. And, you know, we've tried to pass that on to our team and onto our sons. One of our team members has been actively involved in the Farm Bureau and Scott's on the local Nevada Economic Development Council. So I feel as a businessman that we owe it to our communities to be excellent in what we do. And part of that is to give back to serve our communities and try to create jobs. To me, jobs are noble. I think they're good for our community. I think they're good for our neighbors. And I want our farm to represent being a good neighbor, a good steward, a part of where we're at.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, certainly with the pandemic here, we've had, I'm going to call it an erosion of that that idea that farms are that jobs are noble, you know, we can pay somebody to be unemployment and make a whole lot more than they can working. And that certainly is eroding that idea that, hey, you know, a job is what we really should be aspiring to. It gives us value. So and that's also one thing I see sometimes with some of my wealthier clients where their kids have never really worked anything in their life. They're actually become the most miserable clients I have. You know, they've never really had a job. They've been handed too much money. You know, they end up either snorting it up their nose or they die of an overdose or whatever it might be. And it's just sad to see them. They're like a boat out on the sea with no oar, no guidance, no rudder. And it's just sad to see that.
Now, and Lori and I have been very intentional in trying to train our family to be a family. We feel that for our family to have success, and especially when it's a private family-owned business, we had better be treating our business as a business for the success of our family and not make anything entitled, not make anything assumed. And really help them to develop a discipline and things like that. And it's been good. We've had great family meetings, and we invite the daughter-in-laws to be a part of all the discussions. And we've been very blessed to have the family that we have surrounding us.
And I'm guessing, based on what you said originally, that the transfer of the operation, not the land, but the operation from your dad to you is likely going to be a little easier than the transition of the farm operation from you and Lori to Scott and Eric. I think it's just, you know, with the extra, you know, just the extra capital, the tax requirements and so on, I'm guessing that's still an ongoing process for you.
Yes, it is. And it will be for several years. But when you think about it, you know, I started my career in 88 and, you know, equipment was relatively cheaper and land price was definitely cheaper relatively. And my dad encouraged me to go out and wait on the equipment purchases. He would provide the equipment if I'd provide the labor. And he encouraged me to go out and take a risk on a couple of farms before he retired, which was lucky, but it was a good decision on our part to do it that way. And so when he retired in 1993, I bought his operation, equipment line, everything essentially out for $350,000. So today, you know, if Lori and I would just sell out to the boys, you know, it's, you know, 10 times that amount. And the amount of risk that is compared to then is a lot higher today. And, you know, transferring that wisely and is been a part of the things we've done. So that's why we've created a partnership now where Lori and I and Scott and Eric are formed the partnership, and they're creating their equity in this partnership. And Lori and I are gradually getting out of our equity is the goal in all this.
Well, and I think you've also indicated that both Scott and Eric and then Kyle have done their own investment sort of away from the partnership just to provide some, liquidity, well, not even liquidity, but just diversification of their investment instead of sticking everything into the farm pod, which is important. I mean, you want to grow that farm, but I also think there's times where it's good to have something outside of farming to fall back on. When farming's not doing good, typically the economy's doing good. And when the economy's not doing good, farming's doing good. So I think that's just wise.
Well, one of the things that we've really tried to do with our accounting system is to separate our investment mindset in land from our operational mindset in our current assets, our leases, our equipment, and the things that actually drive the farm. And so, you know, I've always shared with the boys, if you want to be part of operations, you're welcome if that's what you want. But the operations are not going to be divided equally if Lori and I should happen to get wiped out by the proverbial bus before those sons that are farming are able to get it transferred.
Right.
And you know, all the kids understand that, all the wives are very supportive of that. And it just makes sense that if the sons that are farming, if Laura and I still have part of that operations, and we've had sons commit to carrying that economic driver, we're going to get that transferred, you know, if something should happen to us. Right. But the land we look at as a separate investment, and that to us is that's the legacy that Laura and I have benefited from. You know, I'm standing on the shoulders of a grandfather I never knew.
Right.
And my dad built upon it. Lori and I have built upon it. And that's our legacy or our love gift to the next generations.
Yeah. And speaking of the gift to the next generation, you know, we do have some possible tax changes coming down the road. Matter of fact, as we're taping this, this is the 1st of October. And, you know, yesterday, the Congress, the Democratic part of the Congress, couldn't quite get their act together. And partially, part of me is glad that they didn't get their act together, but that's a separate podcast maybe to have. But what are your thoughts on some of the ideas coming out of Congress right now as far as either succession, estate taxes, or income taxes, and so on?
Well, I have lots of opinions. I don't know for sure what's right or wrong. But I also know that the uncertainty that they're creating right now is really created a lot of turmoil. But, you know, our family has been very proactive on my parents. I'll say that my parents have been very proactive on generation skipping trusts and trying to say, you know, they worked hard, they bought things and paid for it with after-tax dollars, after living dollars. And so their feeling is they don't want to leave a lot to Uncle Sam.
Yep.
If it makes sense to keep the farm together to do some things. And so I've been very blessed that the folks have been proactive and very intentional in making some plans that benefit my brother and I and their grandkids.
And I think, you know, what I find out, or I was talking to somebody and they had mentioned, and I think this is a correct answer. Let's say Congress goes too far one way, you know, they really start clamping down or eliminating step up. Well, the reality is over time, the business sector always brings Congress back to where it sort of needs to be. Now, it could be maybe it went too far, it was too liberal, but, you know, the business is really what drives America. Not Congress, not even the president, but, you know, what's good for the business, sort of like the old saying, what was good for General Motors is good for America. Well, now it's not General Motors anymore, but what's good for the business of America is what eventually is going to happen. So even if Congress, you know, say imparts some of these draconian measures that they're talking about, likely they would be temporary. Now, temporary might be 10 or 20 years, and it may ultimately end up affecting somebody negatively, but eventually it'll come back, hopefully, to where it needs to be.
You know, that's, I agree wholeheartedly with that, but you never know when your time is up, and the family just has to be prepared for that, you know, that eventuality, and be honest with what the impact of that could mean to the next generations. Because if the families haven't been intentional about having those plans, operations could be divided up, and that's the last thing a lot of mom and dads want. So I'm not, it's just, they're hard discussions, they're emotional discussions, but they're necessary discussions.
Yep. Well, and you know, speaking of not knowing when your time is up, just in the last, I would say the last 3 weeks, I've had three men close to my age, some a little younger, some a little older. One died of a massive stroke, one died of a massive heart attack, and then one got diagnosed with an aggressive form of cancer, and he was gone in like in 2 weeks. So you just don't know when it's going to be your time.
Nope, and that's why we have to be enjoying what we're doing and, you know, trying to be the best that we're called to be.
Yeah, and I was trying to enjoy myself a couple weeks ago by harvesting my soybeans, and I was like 3 days too early. So, you know, that was, you know, that's my idea of enjoying myself is operating a combine. So, but.
Well, that's why I farm. I'd love to run a combine and a corn planter. That's why I do it. But I can't tell you the last time I've spent a whole lot of time doing either one. But
I know. As your operation gets larger, you know, you become more of a logistics person than you are an operator. So,
I'm trying to give the boys an opportunity, I also got to give them the opportunity to make a mistake. So I'm trying to transfer leadership that way too. So,
yeah. Well, you always learn more from your mistakes than you do your successes. You know, if you have too many successes in a row, you get a little bit complacent, and then that's usually when you have the worst thing happen to you. That's what I found out in life. But hey, we're getting close to the end of the podcast, and I always end with a couple questions. The first question is, what keeps you up at night?
So probably the social discourse and the loss of civility that's going on in our country right now. It feels like the algorithms of Google's marketing department sending the information that they think sells to us over and over, along with the political climate. Those are the things which I know I can't control any of them. It's just one of those things that just, it concerns me, and probably more so for my grandkids' generation.
Yeah. No, my granddaughter's 2.5 and my grandson's 8 months. And I'm concerned for them now based on the traits that my granddaughter is showing right now. She may end up being the first female president. I'm not sure. I mean, she's running us already. So, that's one of those things. And then the last question I always ask is, what is your definition of success in farming?
Being a faithful steward of the blessings that we've received and called the steward.
That's a good definition. I think that's important for us to understand. It is a blessing that's been given to us. We are a steward. We're a temporary steward, and we need to leave it to that next generation better than we got it. So definitely agree with that. Well, Steve, is there anything else you want to add before we end the podcast?
No, it's just always a pleasure visiting with you, Paul, and stop by if you're in our neighborhood.
I will plan on that the next time. I'm actually going to be driving by your neck of the woods on Monday night, but I am driving from Owatonna, Minnesota, and I have to be in Topeka, Kansas the next morning for a 10 a.m. meeting. So that may be a little difficult for me to stop by. So,
well, I'll look forward to whenever it will be.
Okay. Well, thanks, Steve. Again, this is the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. I'm Paul Niefer, your host, and we're signing off.